The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1. Proudly sponsored by Volkswagen. Volkswagen.ie.
Or Ray at RTE.ie. Burnout, the secret to solving the stress cycle is a new book by twin sisters Emily and Amelia Nagowski. And they're on the line from London. Good afternoon, Emily and Amelia.
Hello, Ray.
Now, I don't know how I'm going to distinguish from one or the other, so I'll say your name before a question, I suppose, is the best thing.
Will do.
So tell us a bit about yourselves first, Emily.
So I'm a sex educator, and I wrote a book called Come As You Are that was mostly about the science of women's sexual well-being, but there was one chapter that was about stress and emotion processing, and people really found that to be the most important aspect of it, of course, because the best predictor of a woman's sexual well-being is her overall well-being. So I told this to Amelia, and she was like, no duh.
Yeah, this is Amelia. I thought, well, that seems obvious to me because I am a choral conductor. And as a conductor, one of the primary activities I engage in on the podium is getting my singers to engage emotionally with the music that they're making. So basically, I have to teach people how to feel their feelings from scratch. So I know well that it's not a thing that people intuitively just know how to do. It didn't surprise me at all that people connected to that information in Emily's book. Okay. And when I actually learned how to do it myself, not just on stage, but in my own real life, I do believe that it probably saved my life.
Yes,
twice.
Because you probably had burnout, Amelia.
Yes, I did. Yes, yeah. I was in the third year of coursework for my doctoral program, and I ended up in the hospital with a pain that the doctors couldn't diagnose as any particular condition. So they told me, oh, it's just stress. Go home and relax. But it turns out stress is not just stress. Stress is a physiological process that takes place in your body. And it was the stuff that I learned from Emily and in recovery from burnout that we ended up putting in the book.
Okay. So, Emily, how would you define, describe burnout?
Technically, burnout is a combination of emotional exhaustion, where you feel overwhelmed and exhausted by everything you have to do. And yet somehow, especially for women, we manage to worry that we are still not doing enough. Mm. Along with that goes a kind of depersonalization where you lose access to compassion and empathy, and you may even begin to feel sort of helpless, as if nothing you're doing can make a difference. So when you wake up in the morning, it feels like a project just to get out of bed and brush your teeth.
Yes.
That's burnout.
So much is expected of women, and you lay it out in the book there. There's one of the lines there, the truth will set you free, but first it will piss you off. And that's a quote from Gloria Steinem. And I thought, yeah, that's true of this book. That, as a woman,
sorry,
you read this book and you go, oh God, it's very tough, very, very, very tough. And I'm joking, but it, as a man, I felt guilty, not that you care. But let's go, there's a difference between stress and stressors. So is the stress constantly trying to live up to the world's expectations of you as a woman? Is that part?
No, that's the stressor.
That's the stressor.
That is the outside pressure that is activating a physiological process in our body. And the difficulty is that the behaviors we can engage in to try to deal with the stressor, that thing that's outside our body, is a totally different set of behaviors from the ones that will help us to move through this cycle of the stress response. Stress is this cycle with a beginning, a middle, and an end. Yeah. And we burn out when we get stuck in the middle,
yes,
where we confuse trying to deal with the stressor with what's going to help our body to return to a state of balance and calm.
It's the first time I had a light bulb moment about this, because everybody talks now about the fight or flight and the fact that, you know, in hundreds and thousands of years ago, the stress in our lives was running away from a predatory animal. So we don't get that anymore. Stress is different now. It's like a job interview or worrying about your teenage daughter or whatever. But we don't physically then act out the rest of the stress that our ancestors would have. Is that it?
Exactly.
That's it, right. Okay.
Yeah, our bodies understand what running means. Our bodies understand the 20-second hug. The reason that's so good is because evolutionarily, if you return home from your escape from a predator and you wrap your arms around the people in your tribe, your home, your family, that's how your body knows you are now safe. Your body is a safe place for you to be. That's why something like a hug or physical activity are the two most efficient strategies for dealing with the stress in your body. body, which is separate, again, from dealing with the things that cause your stress.
This is Amelia. I was just, when we were listening to Paula telling her story about losing her house to a fire, I was thinking that is exactly an example of this, where she is truly in a life-threatening situation, but running or fighting is not going to solve her problem. And yet she's experiencing the stress as though she were still in this life-threatening situation. So I hope that she's taking steps to complete the stress response cycle by engaging in physical activity, by connecting with people she loves, by using her imagination to think through a fantasy of what it will be like when this solution is solved, and all kinds of other strategies you can do.
There's eight of them in chapter
one. There's eight of them in chapter one.
And Amelia, just to stay with you for a second, your own story is that stress builds up because you don't fulfill the cycle. You don't let the cycle go through. So it builds up inside you, and that's how you got physically sick.
Exactly. And it's for me, it was the buildup of low-level stressors over a long period of time. I dismissed them because they all seemed so small and so just sort of normal everyday life. And everybody experiences this. But when you never allow your body to go through the process that it's evolved to go through, all those neurochemicals have no place to go. They end up stuck, physically stuck in your body. Your body holds on to all of it. And eventually, for me, it actually destroyed an organ.
Yeah. So we do have to run. We do have to be active in some way, shape or form, because it replicates what our ancestors would have done, you know, running away from animals. That's it.
Can absolutely work. It can be an ideal thing for a lot of people. For me, I was very active already. I was working out 3 and 4 times a week, doing cardio, lifting weights. I did yoga, but none of it worked for me. I was doing it for the wrong reason, and because it was failing me for the reasons I was supposed to be doing it, it did not work for the stress management. When I learned about all the other ways to complete the stress response cycle, I added one in particular. One story I tell is I learned that I can complete the stress response cycle in my imagination. So I started doing my regular elliptical machine workout, and I started imagining myself as Godzilla tromping on the university where I was attending school, destroying the parking lot, crushing the administrative building. And now at the end of my workout, I didn't just feel hot and sweaty and tired. I felt powerful and successful and elated. And that's what it took for me. So it's different for everyone.
Now, I said early on in the show that this is geared towards women. So will you explain, Emily, the human giver syndrome?
Yes. So we got this language from a very dark but short and wonderful book called Down Girl, The Logic of Misogyny by a moral philosopher named Kate Mann. She posits a world where there's sort of two kinds of humans. There's the human beings who, you can tell by the name, have a moral obligation to be their full humanity. They're the human beings. And then there's the human givers who have a moral obligation to give their full humanity, their time, their attention, their love, their affection, their bodies, their hopes and dreams, their very lives, to the human beings so that the human beings can achieve their full being potential. Guess which one the women are?
Yes, the human giver.
And now giving itself is not the problem. We heard in the story of Kelly and Paula, this, like, we want to live in a world full of people who are willing to sell their treasures because their neighbor's house burned down. Yeah. That's a glorious, beautiful thing. The problem arises when there are some people who feel entitled to take whatever they want from a certain group of people. And the more a giver gives them, the more that person feels entitled to have whatever it is they want. That's when the imbalance comes in. And women get burnt out because they continue to give and give with no ability to get any of their own needs met, because it's not a giver's role to have needs and impose them on someone else.
So you're saying from day one, girls, then women, are expected to be pretty, happy, calm, generous, and attentive to the needs of others, that being probably men mainly.
Men and their children, yep.
Men and their children, right. So they can't be who they really should be, their true selves. And that's a sort of an underlying stress then for women, constant. It's constant there.
Absolutely constant. In the research, they actually use the phrase the third shift, from the beginning language of the first shift where you're at work, the second shift where you come home and do the housework and take care of the kids. And that's even in the places where it's most equal, it's still 26 hours a week for women for householding and childcare and 10 for men. And then there's the third shift, the researchers call it, which is sleep. Even in our sleep, women are expected to be the ones who disrupt their sleep to do caretaking of other people in the family.
One damn thing after another is what being a woman feels like. That's what you say.
Chronic low-level stress.
And the real enemy, you say, is patriarchy.
Yeah.
Is it not getting better?
It is getting better. This is Amelia. And the truth is that there has been enormous progress made. For example, marital rape is no longer legal. For example, a woman now has the freedom to choose to keep her own name when she marries. A woman no longer has to give over all of her big victories. There have been victories.
Even when you say it like that, the fact that marital rape was ever allowed is completely crazy, you know.
It feels that way now, doesn't it?
Yes. And then the fact that you would have to take your husband's name, that's daft as well, you know. So maybe...
It seems that way now, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'm so glad that you feel that way. That's an indicator of tremendous progress to me.
Right. Okay, but it hasn't changed enough, obviously, and it has changed in some countries more than others.
Yes. Yeah. There is still a persistent gap between what women are expected to be, both in terms of their generosity to others, how they give their bodies and their lives and their time, and who women actually are. And as their lives progress, they can feel even more acutely how that tension develops, how that chasm deepens.
Mm. And Emily, just on violence against women, because there's that sort of... Some men feel that they own women, and that, unfortunately, that still applies, doesn't it? That, as, and especially when they're married and they feel that they can do whatever they want with the woman in their lives. And that's one thing. The other thing that struck me was, and we spoke about fight or flight earlier on, is this thing, because we've had some high profile rape cases in this country, and a lot was spoken about the freeze thing.
Yes.
Will you talk to me a bit about that?
Sure. So this typical stress response that we talk about, as you say, is fight or flight, which is the gas pedal go stress response of run away or beat the crap out of somebody. But when a person is in a life-threatening situation where your body assesses a threat and decides you are too slow to run, you are too small to fight, it slams on the brakes and you just shut down until the threat is gone or someone comes to save you. Or there's actually a researcher named Stephen Porges who has suggested that a function of the freeze response, as it's called, is to facilitate a painless death. So this is where sometimes people experience it as sort of going into shock. They may feel, even outside their own bodies, sluggish, like they can't even move their bodies. So survivors will look back on a moment when their bodies froze and wonder why they didn't kick or fight or scream or run. And the reason they didn't is because they physically couldn't. Their body was trying to protect them by shutting them down and not allowing them to escalate the violence of a situation. And it doesn't have to be violence as we usually envision it. Women's bodies protect us in sexual situations because there's a lot of vulnerability involved in a situation like that. So what a survivorship looks like is not the same as what we usually envision as experiencing violence.
Yes, fighting against it, yeah. BIC, Bikini Industrial Complex. Now, Amelia, explain that to me, that concept.
The term bikini industrial complex came flying out of my mouth one day at the beginning of a choral rehearsal. I was standing in front of a bunch of college students and trying to teach them to breathe, which it sounds nuts that you have to teach students to breathe, but the fact is, when you inhale, your abdomen should expand. Your abdominal muscles need to be relaxed and able to oscillate between effort and rest, just like all of your muscles, all of your life. But they have been indoctrinated from birth, told that they need to have abs of steel and that their abs should be contracted all the time. And I realized that I was not just having to teach them to sing, I was having to unteach them everything they thought they knew about what their bodies are supposed to look and feel like. So the phrase bikini industrial complex came flying out of my mouth to explain the multi-billion dollar corporations, the corporate lobbying that goes on in the U.S. to support this aspirational ideal that is completely unattainable for almost everyone. The notion just of those shellacked abs of steel, that's just not a thing that anybody needs to have. And to aspire to it creates a stigma against anyone who doesn't have it. That creates shame, that it's actually more toxic for your health than having fat on your abdomen.
Right. There is help in the book, obviously. It's not all bad news. And you say that 42% rest per day is important. 42%, that sounds like a lot. What's that in hours?
It's 10 hours. It's nowhere near as unattainable as it sounds, though. It's, you know, between 7 and 9 hours of sleep. You add into that some paying attention to your food. You add into that some connection with people you really care about. Add into that a little physical activity, and you're there. A lot of people are only an hour or so away from having access to all the rest they're supposed to be getting. And it doesn't have to be, you know, 10 hours exactly every day. It can average out over a week or a month. But when we say you need to get the rest, we don't just mean, wow, it sure is a good idea to get some sleep. What we mean is, if you don't get the rest, the rest will come and get you. Many people may have had the experience where they finally go on vacation and then they find for the next 10 days they've got the flu. Because their body is just, the rest grabs you by the face and pins you to the ground, puts its foot on your chest and says, I told you to lay down. Now get some rest.
So that's an indicator that you're stressed and you're not getting enough sleep and not getting enough rest. What are the for people listening, how would they know that they're suffering from burnout? What are the symptoms?
If you wake up in the morning and you're already tired, you might be burned out.
Right.
If you are not sure if it's worth it to spend 3 extra minutes to brush your teeth because that just seems like too much, you might be burned out.
Right.
If you think that you should be punished because you haven't cleaned out your email inbox, you might be burned out. And if you can't turn off the self-critical voice in your head that's constantly explaining to you all the ways that you're falling short of some ideal or not meeting other people's expectations, that's a really key feature of burnout, the constant personal self-criticism. If you feel overwhelmed or exhausted and yet still worry that you're not doing enough, that's burnout.
Okay. You call the internal critic the mad woman.
We do.
Yeah, from Jane Eyre.
Right. Okay. And she's constantly, we men have the madman then, and we all have that, don't we? This, the person who constantly tells you that you're not achieving enough, you're not good enough, you're not doing what you should.
Yeah, her job is to manage the gap between expected you and actual you.
Right, go on.
And the distance between those two things for women is vast.
And that's the monitor, so the monitor thing, is it? You talk about an experience that I've never seen articulated before. It's where we're going on in life and we're doing something, trying to achieve something, and then we feel that all the effort we're doing is not going to achieve it. And at what stage do we say, stop, this isn't worth it?
Yes, there is. We invented a word for that specific emotion.
Yes.
Yes, you get to a point where you're like working really hard and you're like, I'm going to get this done. Nothing can stop me. I don't care how many forces try to get in my way. So I'm going to do this, right? You're like enraged and furious and working hard, but you oscillate from there into this like hopeless, helpless despair of like, I can't do it. Nothing I do. And then I'm going to do it. And I can't do it. We call that feeling FOOP. And there's a couple of different ways to make a decision about whether to give up and switch to a different goal or to keep trying. And what we ask you to do really is to imagine that you are a squirrel foraging for nuts, right? And at a certain point, you need to like move on from one patch of nuts to the next patch of nuts because you've already foraged all the things that there are to get there. That the squirrel has to make a decision of when to move on. We too need to make a decision of when to move on. The squirrel is not making like a cost-benefit list. It's not making like a pros and cons list. It just knows in its gut, I've done everything I can here. It's time for me to move on. And women too, everyone knows in their gut when they have crossed the line, they've done everything they can here, and it's time for them to let go and move on. But women are raised in a culture that teaches them to believe everyone else's opinion about their lives and their bodies and their internal experience more than they believe what their internal experience itself is trying to tell them. Our hope with the book is it helps women to quiet the noise on the outside and really amplify their internal voice to trust and believe when that voice is saying, girl, you have done everything you can, you can let go now.
Move on. Of course, it's easier said than done. You know, you may not be able to move on for
Oh yeah, you hear that voice and
whatever,
you persist
yes.
in whatever it is for 5 more months before you can bring yourself actually to create change.
And then this is Amelia, remembering that quitting itself is a stressor. So when you make a new plan of what you're going to do, remember to complete the stress response cycle.
Right, oh God. Okay, so what advice to people, you know, who feel that they're stressed? We've activity, positive social interaction, say that. You said affection there, the 20-second hug or a 6-second kiss if you're in a relationship. Big old cry, creative expression. What else? Because one of our texters here says, I have 4 children under 10, work part-time, run the home. What can they really say to me to reduce stress levels? That's Fiona.
When you feel overwhelmed and exhausted, and yet you still feel like you're not enough, feeling like you're not enough is a form of loneliness. So step one is reach out and get help. When you feel like you cannot handle what's going on in the world around you, you don't need more grit, you don't need more persistence, you need more help.
And can we also just normalize, if you're in a situation like that, multiple young children running a household, you're just going to be stressed. That is not a sign that you're doing it wrong. That's the sign that you are doing it the way that there is to do it. Yes. We're not going to reduce your stress level. We're just going to help you to like siphon off the very worst of it so that you can survive until they're all able to drive.
I meditate for the last 18 months using some videos from YouTube. Would the women recommend it as a de-stressor? Claire asks.
There is a lot of research that demonstrates that mindfulness practice is a definite stress reliever, both in the immediate feeling better right now effect and also in the long-term rewiring your brain so that it processes stress differently.
Women are women's worst enemies, says Anna. It's as simple as that. Who was it that said, keep your friends close and your enemies closer? Men will never judge you the same way that women will. I could write a book
on
the
subject. No, they judge you in an entirely different way. Sorry.
No, well, you know, what they're saying there is that, you know, women can be cruel. That's what I think they're saying.
Yeah, so when we are cast in the role of human givers, if one of us declines or falls short or says, look, I need to take care of my own energy and not do this project, then it's like they're betraying the other givers, putting more work onto the other givers. And so women can be incredibly cruel and vicious because they feel betrayed by someone who is supposed to be on their team. And so we like judge and say, what's the matter with her? She needs to get back in line. Yes. That's a kind of energy that we get from fellow human giver syndrome folks rather than from the people who feel entitled to our energy.
So women maintain the status quo as well. Last night I was woken up at 3:30 by a neighbour's barking dog. I couldn't get back to sleep. Then at 5:30 I was finally getting back to sleep. A different neighbour's dog barked for a half an hour and I was wakened again. I've been exhausted at work. This happens regularly. I cannot speak to the owners as they are difficult people. I am at my wit's end. At weekends, the first dog starts barking at 7. I've spoken to the guards and I think that's for a different program. Thanks for that anyway, Anne.
The short answer is earplugs. To a problem like that. Yeah.
This seriously described me. I thought I was going crazy. 27 years a lone parent with 3 children. I was exhausted for 3 years. That's Andrea there. So there's some sound advice there, and I would imagine that when people read it, they'll recognise themselves in it. Burnout is the name of the book, The Secret to Solving the Stress Cycle. Emily and Amelia Nikowski, thanks so much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.